morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to episode 3 of Interop Live. This is a special series of shows here on Interop Radio, and we are very glad that you could be with us. Things are really starting to get exciting here at Interop on a number of fronts. Well, today is the first official day of Interop. It's the day that we have conferences going on. There's the Interop conference itself that has started. There's the Information Week conference that has gotten started. We've got Cloud Connect. We've got the Dark Reading Security Boot Camp going on. There is just more happening in the conference than you can shake a stick at. And it's not as though things are at all quiet here on the expo floor. Now, the expo floor is not going to open until tomorrow, but that means that the big doors are swung wide open. We have tractor trailers in here. We have forklifts moving around. There are still more of the snorkel lifts and mobile platforms. So it's entirely possible that sometime during this broadcast, you're going to hear some of that industrial kind of noise going on around us. That's just an artifact of us being here live at the Network Operations Center on what will be the expo floor here at Interop 2015. Now, we've got some great guests today, and the very first guest today is, he's a special guest for us because he's going to talk about one of the great aspects of the Interop Net, and that's the SDN Lab. We've got Chris Stradman with us. Chris is sort of the co-king of the SDN Lab. Is that basically a description of your title, Chris?
Yes.
Oh,
Bill Jensen and I are both coordinating to try to keep the lab on track.
And from what I've seen, you are doing a pretty darn good cat herding job there. So tell us a little bit about what's going on. First of all, describe for us what the SDN Lab is. We know that the Interop Net itself is all about reliability and being a production network. What is the SDN Lab all about?
Well, I'd say the primary reason for the SDN Lab is to allow attendees to learn more about software-defined networking and be able to come up and talk to practitioners in the industry, both consumers of the technology and vendors selling the products, and maybe get a more global view than just a particular sales pitch for a particular niche.
Well, now, SDN is something that we've all been talking about for a long time, but that doesn't mean that all the technology and the products are fully mature, completely baked, and ready for just anyone to put into place. I mean, this is still pretty much bleeding edge technology in a lot of cases, isn't it?
It is still a moving target. The standards are still going through ratification. In some cases, people are trying to figure out, you know, places to use it. The most common use case at the moment is the data center.
Well, you know, you mentioned that use case, and I know one of the things that a lot of people have told me, it's one of those things that some of the SDN naysayers, if you will, like to say, is that SDN really only matters for the very largest networks. You know, really the ISPs, the big cloud providers, the huge international enterprise networks, that they're the only ones who really need to think about SDN. Do you agree with that description of the technology?
Not so much to think about. I think at this point in time, to be able to do full deployments, you're going to have to be a reasonably big or specialized player. It's still new enough and bleeding edge enough that you're not going to be able to do a full deployment while you're trying to juggle 99 other things in your, you know, your daily life. However, I think it's going, as it matures, it's going to push further and further down. And one of the things important to me as an individual is to at least let people understand it, be informed to consumers when they're going out.
Well, now, is this the kind of thing where someone at a smaller company or even an individual who wants to increase their skill level could do some experimentation with it? I mean, do you have to go out and buy a big Cisco core router in order to have something to experiment with, or is it possible to do experimentation on a smaller scale?
Oh, it's absolutely possible. There are a number of, a plethora of open source projects surrounding it. Open vSwitch, which is very commonly used on a lot of Linux-derived platforms, does speak OpenFlow, I think up through 1.3 right now. I don't know if it does 1.4. And you can build your own experimental lab basically out of parts in your to-be-recycled pile.
Very interesting. So basically, if you were the sort of person who 15 years ago might have been trying out Linux, then you could very easily be trying out SDN today.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, you can do a whole SDN demo on your laptop if you want to. Or you can take, half a dozen old Pentiums and set them up, to have them simulate real switches. Are you going to pass 10 gigs across any of this? No. But if all you're wanting to do is learn how do the pieces fit together, what's the advantage of controller A over controller B, or why would I maybe want to use this software application under this controller? What does it really do for me? What does it do to the packets? You absolutely can do that on really less than consumer grade hardware these days, on things way lesser horsepower than you would find at Fry's at the low end right now.
That actually sounds pretty encouraging to me, because from what I've seen of SDN, it does seem like the sort of technology that is going to benefit from more people experimenting with it, especially more people experimenting and getting involved in some of these open source projects. That's really what it needs, rather than being solely controlled by the very large infrastructure network vendors.
Right. And to be fair, in most cases, when you're going to shows, vendors are going to want to show their latest, greatest, sexiest products, which these days is going to be 40 gig, 100 gig interfaces. And that's great. And I understand the psychology there, but I also don't want people to be scared away when they see a, $70,000 switch, which is all 40 and 100 gig interfaces. And they're like, oh my God, I can't afford to learn about that. Reality is, you can run it on a 100 meg interface on an old Pentium if you want to.
Now, you mentioned a couple of the open source or standards-based projects that are underway. OpenFlow is probably the one that most people have heard about. You mentioned an OpenVM, I think, earlier. Can you tell us, are there, aside from OpenFlow, are there, two or three primary open source projects that people should be aware of if they're interested in SDN?
Well, OpenFlow is really the primary protocol being used for us right now. The problem with the phrase SDN, Software Defined Networking, is it kind of means whatever it means to whoever you're talking to at the moment. By the strict definition, most decent size enterprises or ISPs have been using things like Expect for years to configure their their routers and their switches and do auto deployments and whatnot. Is that SDN? It is software driving the hardware. You know, so, you know, NetConf, which has been bouncing around forever, is finally starting to get some traction moving forward in terms of larger enterprises and whatnot using it for configuring and doing configuration management. You know, so part of the problem with the SDN is, what does the phrase really mean?
You know, it's interesting because that's been something I've heard a lot of people talk about over the last couple of years, that just figuring out if you and the person you're talking to are thinking about the same things when SDN comes up. You know, it's the old analogy of trying to nail Jell-O to a tree comes up, because, like you say, it's entirely possible to have a conversation going where you and the other person are using the phrase SDN and are talking about entirely separate things.
Yes.
And that doesn't make things any easier when you're trying to move forward.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, for a lot of people, SDN equals the open flow protocol. You know, I don't know who's really right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the SDN lab here at Interop. What kinds of things should people expect to see from out here? Are people just demonstrating their latest products here, or is there something else going on in the SDN lab?
Well, there's kind of two aspects to it. Understandably, the vendors want to be able to demonstrate their product. And so they have demos they came in that they had already built that wanted to show off the strong points of their products. Once, during hot stage and getting everything ready, once that was kind of like settled out and they had their normal demos going, we started working with and encouraging the vendors to cross-pollinate, to try to drive somebody else's device with their controller, or have one of their devices controlled by a different controller, or monitoring across several controllers or devices. And the vendors have been working amongst themselves to come up with overlap areas that they can coordinate and get things together. Like so many technologies, we're still fairly early in the curve. So it's a little bit like dealing with OSPF, I guess, back in the 90s at Interop, where not every vendor interpreted the OSPF standard the same way.
Right, right.
But as shows went along and the vendors continued to work together at the shows, OSPF kept ratifying until now it's something that's fairly well understood. And, you know, if you have the standard, you can pretty much write to it. We're kind of in the early stages here. Not everybody's gear is going to talk to each other. And the reality is as standards build, you might write a whole bunch of paragraphs to describing the standard, and if there's any area that it's gray, you're almost guaranteed, you know, if you have three programmers, you're going to get three interpretations of that gray area. And then it takes the folks working together to decide, hey, okay, you know, let's clarify what we really mean in this gray area.
Well, and that's really one of the key things, because ideally, you talked about controllers and switches. So these are, broadly speaking, the two big components in SDN. You have something that's actually physically passing the packets back and forth, and you have something that's telling them how to get about doing that. And right now it seems like most companies kind of assume that you're going to have the stack of controller and switch coming from a single vendor. And it sounds like the ideal world from the customer point of view would be if you didn't have to make that assumption. If you could, to use a tired old marketing phrase, if you could go with best of breed for controllers, for switches, or even if you wanted to save money, maybe use some new controllers with your legacy switches and that kind of stuff. Is that what you're talking about when you talk about interoperability?
Yes. In a lot of cases, you see the initial presentations kind of being greenfield oriented, in the sense that, hey, we're going to come in, we've got your data center, and we can cover you, you know, soup to nuts in the data center. The reality is not everybody has the luxury of having a greenfield installation. A lot of people might have heavy installed base in something else, and the questions become, I want to start rolling this in, but how do I do it? Can I do it from the edge in? Can I do it from the middle out? Can I take a subset and move to SDN and then coexist with all my existing legacy setup? A little bit like what we went through with VoIP a number of years ago.
Absolutely. Now, I need to let you get back to trying to herd all these cats out in the SDN lab. But before we do, just a couple of questions. We've had a question from our audience. Someone saying, with all the uncertainty, with all the things still going on, how long do you think it's going to be before we do have this level of standardization? You know, are we talking about something that's right around the corner, say next year we'll be saying all the problems are solved, or is it going to be, you know, by the end of the decade maybe the problems will be solved, or are we looking at perhaps by the time we all retire things will be solved? Where are we falling into that category?
Well, if you're lucky enough to be in a greenfield, the stuff is mature enough now that you can have a single vendor come in and do it all and it's going to work. As for the more of the cross vendors, the interoperability, my personal gut feeling is we're probably looking about 2 years.
All right, you heard it here first, folks. For Interop 2017, we may be talking about interoperability in entirely different ways, because by then, with any luck at all, the vendors will have started to talk to one another on a regular basis.
Well, in fairness, they already are working toward it, but, you know, there's enough players and pieces, and there's always gray areas and early standards that make it tough sometimes.
Well, one last question before you go. I know there's a schedule of classes and presentations and all of that going on around SDN Lab. If someone really wanted to be here for an important thing, is there a particular time or day when you would recommend that someone come in and be sure to touch base with the SDN Lab in order to get a good, solid picture of what's going on?
Well, pretty much all the resources are going to be here the whole time the show floor is open. So I'd say pretty much any time. I mean, the schedule, different people are going to be interested in different aspects of SDN, you know. And so I don't know what classes might appeal to an individual.
Well, we will be talking more with people from the SDN Lab. We'll try to corral Chris, or maybe even his partner in crime, Bill, to come in at some point and talk some more about the SDN Lab. Chris, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us here on Interop Radio today.
Thank you.
That was Chris Stradman, who is one of the chief cat herders for the SDN Lab. And we're going to sort of change directions now, because here in the studio, we've got someone from the InteropNet itself. Who's joined us over here? Hold on. We have a brief technical glitch. Try that one more time. Come over. We're going to get... now we go. Now you can stay there. Finally, the mic's come alive.
Hey.
There you go.
Hey, Curtis, this is Mike Rydell from 7 Signal. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Mike. So how is the experience of Interop going for you so far?
That's great. It's some new things going on this year, and as you heard from Chris, the SDN. But all in all, that's been a good show. The deployment's gone well. Things are up and running. It's good.
Cool. Now, remind us, what is 7 Signal's doing here in the Interop Net?
What 7 Signal does, we focus on Wi-Fi performance management. So here at the show, I've got some probes scattered throughout the show floor and the off-show floor, and I'm actively testing the wireless network, the wired network, and with active tests as well as passive tests. So what we're all about is trying to get the end user quality of experience that we trend over time, and also can alert an alarm on meeting SLA target values. So that's what we're doing here at Interop this year.
Well, I know that there are going to be an awful lot of attendees who are grateful for that, because it seems like a big piece of what you're trying to do is recognize that problems might be starting to exist before they have an impact on the users.
Yes.
Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. I mean, the other thing, you know, as network engineers, network architects, we build out networks, but then we really never completely think through and say, okay, what is the end user experience we'd like to see an end user have? And if we do think through that, how do we measure that? So what we do is, once we put some probes out in the network, then we define an SLA. For example, currently now the SLA target value I have for the upload and download of TCP throughput is 10 megabits up, 10 megabits down. And I'm tracking that and running those tests in different areas of the network over the Wi-Fi to see if that's really the service and quality of experience that we can deliver to an end user out there. That's one of the tests we're running.
That's awfully interesting. And it seems that this particular Interop, there is a lot of attention being paid to that end user experience, because it sounds like you're doing on the wireless side of things something similar to what one of our other partner companies, NetBees, is doing on the wired side. Yep. Understanding things correctly?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I've got to ask, I was talking to someone, a network architect at a big community college in Texas a couple of months ago, and he was talking about one of the things that they are now dealing with is the proliferation in devices trying to grab Wi-Fi signal. They are in the process of deploying 802.11ac. They're already deploying Wave 1. They've got Wave 2 on order, and they're going to be rolling it out. Because he said every student now represents 7 devices trying to get on the wireless network. Do you think that that's the kind of number that we're going to see here at Interop? I mean, are people coming to a show like this with a backpack full of devices all trying to glom on to the Wi-Fi signal?
Yeah, I mean, normally in a convention environment, I've done many conventions, we see probably more in the 2 to 3 devices. You know, the attendees will have a tablet that they may pack around with them. They may have their laptop if they're doing email and some, you know, heavier application they need to be doing with work while they're here at the show, and then obviously their phone. So generally in this environment, you know, they're packing 1 to 3 devices, but generally not more than that from what we've, you know, seen and what we expect here.
Okay, so just as many tablets and phones as the college kids, probably fewer handheld game devices
yeah,
than
so,
you're going to find on a university campus.
Yeah, and in the university, I've got some experience in the university space and still some customers and colleagues as well. And they are seeing that growth to the numbers you're talking about, because they'll have, you know, they'll have a phone, a tablet, a computer, numerous other devices, whether it be a Fire, a Roku, a Apple TV, Xbox. In some cases, some students will have an Xbox and a PlayStation. So they've got, you know, they're a little heavier in that wireless device in a fixed area versus, you know, something like here at the convention space. But yeah, definitely the growth in the wireless space of number of devices for sure.
Now, with Mike talking, I do want to let you know the increase in sound level isn't just your imagination. We do have some, I'm watching some forklifts go back and forth about 10 feet behind Mike's head. So, want to remind everyone that this is live radio, so you're hearing us right from the floor as it's being built here at Interop 2015. So we appreciate Mike being with us, appreciate you staying with us through all of the noise and excitement here as we're building the plan at Interop 2015. Mike, I'm curious, one of the other things that people tend to talk about a lot, especially in situations like conferences and university settings, is user density. And I was thinking about that. I was at one of our other conferences about a month ago, the Enterprise Connect conference. And in a keynote session, I looked up and, you know, there are probably 2,000 seats in the auditorium, pretty much all of them filled. And I would say at least half of them, someone had a tablet or a laptop open, making notes and doing stuff while the keynote was going on. When you have that many people in one place all trying to use it once, does that tend to play with the user experience? And is that the kind of thing that you're able to either simulate or monitor the effects of with what you do?
Yeah, we can monitor in those environments. We tend to get not so much in the business and the convention space, but more in, you know, the enterprise, the healthcare, the edu. But to the point you're making, in that conference space, a lot of people do want to know what that end user experience is, and that's very difficult to do. So putting a seven signal eye, as we call it, a sensor, a probe in that environment, can sit there and run those active tests and give you a very good idea what that end user experience is. And they're getting to the point in those conferences, there's a lot of applications to where they'll push the slide deck down real time to the conference attendees. So wireless in those environments is used at a very high level, and lots of performance around the design to get them to work correctly.
Well, the network architect that I was talking to, and it was Houston Community College, which has, you think of a small community college, he's dealing with 26 different campuses and tens of thousands of students and users around. And he was saying that a lot of professors have started actually using video, that there are educational equivalents of YouTube or even YouTube itself that they're using in their lectures. So all of a sudden, you've got a lecture hall with 200 students in it, and he's saying, well, let's all grab this YouTube video. And that's got to put a huge demand on whatever the infrastructure of wireless you've put into place.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you're seeing that, you know, not only video in the education space, but even back to the convention space, a lot of the arenas and stadiums we see, they're crazy as it may sound. People want to watch instant replay of football on their phone while they're in the stadium, and that puts a huge demand on the wireless infrastructure.
Well, it sounds like things are getting more exciting. Now, from what you see, I know that, you know, we are both of an age when we could remember starting to use 802.11b. And, you know, essentially with every additional user who connected to an access point, you could watch your performance fall off. With AC, are we finally getting to a point where we can have a lot of these users in a single space and continue to get good performance to all of them? Or are we getting close to that sort of wireless nirvana we've all been looking for?
It is definitely getting better over time. I mean, one of our biggest challenges is no matter what we're doing with the 802.11 technology, our biggest hurdle to get over is we're still what I call spectrum challenged or spectrum restricted, because we only have so much spectrum that we can legally use in the 802.11, for Wi-Fi and 802.11. But, as N has come along, AC's come along, Wave 1, Wave 2, and soon to be some things coming with AX, we are becoming more spectral efficient, I guess is a better way to put it, so that, what spectrum we have, we're utilizing it better. So things are getting to the point, it'll be really interesting, they've deployed, this show is all 100% AC across the board this year, so it'll be interesting to see what that experience is in this environment. And they also have deployed a few early Wave 2 devices, so it'll be interesting to see what we see from the performance profile of those two different technologies used this year at the show.
I am looking forward to getting a chance to play with the Wave 2 a little bit from the user perspective. And I have to admit, my experience with the 11AC has been tremendous. I mean, on Friday, I'm laughing because someone is dropping large metal things just to make it more challenging for us here. We were able on Friday to do an hour of full live streaming video from right here in the studio, and the performance was superb.
And that was 100% wireless.
That was 100% wireless because we're still in a stage of construction where let's say that the termination of our Cat6 cable did not meet the specifications of the standard. And so the cable was failing us, but the wireless was rock solid. So
yeah, and it's interesting you say that. I've seen some environments, as crazy as it may be, that the wireless has been a go-to medium instead of wired in some cases. But to your point is, here on the show floor, I run some basic benchmark tests prior to all of the exhibitors and attendees showing up, and I pushed well over 300 megabits from the show floor across wireless, just even out to SpeedNet, and then I've got an iPerf server. I was pushing some stuff out to the internet, and here again, I was pushing well above upload and download above 300 megabits wirelessly.
Oh, that is dynamite wireless performance. Now, we're not going to suggest that everyone who's attending Interop all of a sudden drop out to speed test and see if they can duplicate that simultaneously. I think that would be of fascinating academic value, but probably not do a whole lot for everyone's user experience. But I think that we definitely are seeing tremendous wireless performance, and Mike and Seven Signal is a big part of making sure that we keep that going on for all of our attendees here. Well, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciate it. I know you are busy doing all the monitoring, especially now that we have the conference attendees here, and they're out there banging on the wireless as they keep track of what's going on. So thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Mike Rydell of Seven Signal here with us on Interop Radio. Well, that is another half hour. You've been with us here on Interop Radio, and it's still just beginning. Today, we have another episode of Interop Radio coming your way at 4 p.m. Pacific time. That's 7 p.m. Eastern time, and I think I'm working on this. We're going to try to have a great story of shark rescue here at Interop, so you're going to want to be sure and tune in for that. In the meantime, please keep up with everything we're doing. We are on Instagram. We are busy tweeting what's going on. Follow us both places. And remember to tell your colleagues about all the stuff going on here at Interop Radio. Well, for all of our guests and the entire Interop team, I'm Kurt Franklin, your host for Interop Radio, saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll be back here at 4 p.m. Pacific. Join us then. See you.